You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 26, 2008. Hello and welcome. This is Bob Sprankle with Bit by Bit. And once again, we're heading back to the Building Learning Communities Conference 2008 down in Newton, Massachusetts with the Allen November Learning Group. And we're going back to day one, Wednesday, July 16th, right after Ewan McIntosh's keynote. This is the session that I went to right after, and it is Ewan with a follow-up to the keynote. A lot of great discussion, a lot of great ideas. I will link to the original keynote in the show notes, so check that out first. And without further ado, Ewan McIntosh with the follow-up.
I'll do those if you're all very quiet and don't come up with any ideas. Okay, the screen will remain really messy because I'm going to do this as we go. We're going to dive into web pages. We're going to, invite you to do the same thing with me, provided the internet stays up. So let me just turn my earboard on so I can pick up the signal there. First of all, thank you very much for coming to this kind of debrief, I guess. And what I'd like to do is, it's quite hard to handle in this room, so it would be nicer if we were all in a big circle. I want you to turn around to the people around you. It's kind of like one of these peace be with you moments at church, and I apologise. I hate them too. But I want you just so you've got someone else to bounce your ideas off, I'd like you all to come up with, do it in threes is a good number. I want you to come up with the two things that you want to talk about the most. I'm only going to give you 30 seconds, well, I'm going to give you a minute to do it, okay? And we're going to do this. The first 5-10 minutes is going to be you guys just talking through what you thought was important in the keynote. So I'm going to time this quite precisely so we don't go over. I want you to get together as a group of three or four and hone down to your two things that you would like to talk about today. Okay, your 1 minute starts now.
Could you make that a part of education without saying, without the teacher, you know, taking over the blog and them not wanting to participate?
I like that. He says how cell phones are so important, and as cell phones are, but my problem is our school district won't allow the students to use cell phones in class, and how I need to overcome that and how to win over my administrators to say that learning is using cell phones in the classroom.
What grade level?
High
what
level are you in school? So that's my concern, because I love that idea. All the students are secretly using their cell phones, and they're texting each other, and so we need to bring it out in the open and say, yes, go ahead, let's do this, and make it part of the lesson.
I just heard the other day in a workshop I was in that a lot of college professors are banning laptops from their room because the kids are unfocused. Now, you pay that much money and someone's going to tell you not to use that tool.
That's I've
just,
never heard of that. It's
just
horrible.
Just blew me away.
That is
away.
Really yeah. So anti-education. I wish they would require these types of workshops for administrators. And all the superintendents need to go to these workshops. They need to see what's going on. I think they're so busy having their meetings. They don't really know what's going down at the level of the actual student.
You're an administrator.
I'm sorry?
Are you an administrator?
No, I'm not. No. We're both in technology.
We're the same technology department.
So we're very interested
in you.
Sorry?
What grade level are you at?
We're K through 12.
Mm-hmm. And so you're technology for our district.
We're both new. We've only been at the school for a year. So I came over from the business world, and I guess you kind of did too.
What area are you from?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
So we're in a private school, but 1,000 students. Yeah. dabble a little bit in all the grade levels. And
but
all
the private school, you probably have more freedom, I would imagine, with what you can do.
We definitely do, but we also have a lot of teachers who've taught there for 30 years. And
it's kind of hard to read some of the teachers who are here at Trident Technology.
That music was your audio cue. I want the group of three to now go with the group of three next door. And I want you to do exactly the same. You've got 45 seconds to hone down your four ideas to two. Okay? Four ideas now to two. You've got 45 seconds starting now.
You know what? I know it's cheating, but...
Now, you've got to be brutal. That's the thing. Don't think too hard. You should now have, between you, two key ideas you want to do. Now, for the last one, you have to work really quickly. I'm going to give you 1 minute with six and six, so a group of 12. You're going to have to maybe even physically move. I want the groups of 12 to get together and knock their four ideas down to two.
Can I ask one question before you do that? Because actually, we didn't get to do the two. Are we just bad?
No, we're bad too.
Okay. You're not bad. You're just rather slow. So I'll give you a minute and a half. I'm going to give you a minute and a half, generously, to knock down to two ideas you want to discuss. Now, there is reason for this, because we're short of time. This is a really quick way to satisfy the most number of people. And it's kind of like having a conversation as well. I'm going to give you a minute and a half to do that, and then we're going to take possibly, I think we're looking at about eight key ideas that we'll explore. Maybe some of them will be duplicates and have time to explore other things as well. Okay? So your minute and a half with is six and six starts now.
Our ideas have been...
Draw your discussions to a close. I'm just going to start taking down, I'm hoping for about eight or ten ideas people would like to discuss. I'm just going to do it in a random order starting here. So this group of 12, what did you come up with? Your top 2 points.
We were just talking about how to try to motivate the higher-ups, the administrators, the superintendent, and motivate them to allow for example, self-ed. I'd love to have my students do self-ed, but we have somebody blocked, and we were kind of brainstorming, you know, getting parents involved, maybe parent movements would get the higher-ups to make changes, because I've been teaching many, many years, and it's like the same.
Second point?
And we didn't get that one.
I got one, I think.
Yes.
Looking at... we had one, I forget. We're talking about open-ended lessons and the dichotomy between trying to allow some sort of, you know, that process to unfold in kind of squaring that with the restrictions placed on you by, you know, bureaucracy.
In your first, talk, you said about the input-output thing. Do they have to have the input from the teacher? How do you set it up? If he teaches science, I mean, some things are absolutes.
Okay, I think I get that. It's quite a big issue, but probably repeated elsewhere, so we'll come back to that. Over here.
We wanted to explore your whole idea of what we can learn from the social networks that the kids are involved with and how we can learn more from that so that we're doing things in schools that really relate to kids.
Okay. Did you have a second point?
Yeah, the second one is about the our program works both in the UK and the US, and so we have a lot to do with both curriculums. And I actually feel, and I live in London, I actually feel that what you're talking about is able to be happening in the UK because there have been some fundamental shifts in how people are beginning to think about education, and that those shifts have not happened in a widespread way, as widespread as they have in the UK. In the U.S. yet. So what do we need to do within the United States curriculum to shift to begin to integrate those things? Can we just do a straw poll as to how many people are not from the U.S. in this room?
Okay. Cool. I'm not putting in U.S. because I think even where shift is happening, we're still dissatisfied.
You know, I'm not saying it's finished in the U.K., but it has begun there, the way that in reality it hasn't.
So what do we need to do to shift... fundamentals, okay? Might have to ask what those fundamentals are. Can I ask the group right at the next one up here? Yeah.
What does the effective use of technology look like? Because that informs leadership. It informs people making decisions about what gets blocked, etc.
Sure.
But something.
Second point.
And second point is then how do you measure that, or how do you help people move together?
So what are the metrics of success? You can tell someone's asked that before. And it's the hardest one to answer. We might leave that to last. No, we'll go for it. A group over here somewhere?
I think we had a kind of different slant on the social networking and pedagogy. This is kind of a group. We were talking about how do we better understand and harness their digital lifestyles without actually poisoning the well. As soon as we become a Facebook friend, they go elsewhere or change what they're doing. So how do we leverage that for as educators to help them learn without some
We got there. Did you have a second point?
We were talking about, we're always talking about things need to change, but we don't know what that change looks like. I mean, and, you know, how do you plan for change when we sort of know, look, I guess it's the brown peg in the square bureaucracy where our schools are so locked down. You sort of started touching on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, then, group it just behind you. Don't know who that would be. Nominate yourself as speaker for the group. The guy in the checkered shirt looks enthusiastic, so what would you? No, yes, you?
One of the things we spoke about, I'll be the checkered shirt.
Yeah.
With time management, with all of these like social networks and all the other things, and individualized learning, what is the curriculum and how does all of this together?
Time management, maybe a touch of productivity. Do you want that word in there or not?
Yeah.
Yeah. And fitting it in. Are you using inverted commas? Because we'll have a discussion about that, hopefully. Was there a second point? Yes.
Well, there appears to be a desire, generally, to let the students define the medium that we're going to use, and the 95% of the teachers that aren't really haven't embraced it yet are still defining the method. And how do you combine those two?
So how do we reconcile
work
student-led learning with a blind teacher?
Well, no, it would be a classical curriculum.
I think that goes back to something from before. It's ringing bells. Your point, student-led learning is important, though. Let's try and incorporate that. So probably in this one here. Combining students' skills and desires with curriculum, something like that. Hopefully we can push the conversation where we want it. There must be a group somewhere here too, in the middle. Yeah?
How do we encourage more divergence with the students without crossing the line to be disrespectful?
Being disrespectful to what or who?
To each other, to, you know, the process in schools. We want our students to not have to be converging, but at the same time, if we encourage divergence in their behavior, it sometimes creates friction.
Sure. So I've used the word due process, so that kind of brings it all in. Any other point there?
No, I'm here on quality teacher. Define that a little bit more, and how do we encourage that, inspire teachers to bring out what's important to them as well?
Okay, that's one big question, but I think they all kind of go together. Any group at the back there? No? Are these the waste and strays? Come over here.
Yeah, how do we bring other teachers from the dark side?
Okay, I'm going to use that one with the round pedagogy with the square bureaucracy, or no, motivating the senior management.
Well, I'm not even thinking of the management.
Laggards.
As the faculty. Yeah.
Yeah. One might say the phrases are interchangeable, but I won't. Okay, I think we're there. Let me just bring that down. So, a bunch of interesting questions. Does anyone feel that their question isn't there, that we need to do it again? One at the back.
I don't know if this will fit in with this, but when you look
plant technology and the flexibility versus the fact that people just want to load schools up with PCs, it affects a different rental model.
So can you put that into a question that we can all discuss and answer?
People are talking about trying to have a one-to-one or a certain densities in schools.
Yeah.
And when you use thin client and you're dealing with a mainframe server and all you're paying for is a $20 keyboard, that mental model enables access for students to the web.
Yeah.
That model is less expensive and yet it's out there, and I'm wondering if you were seeing it as a more effective tool to get these things in the school.
Okay. I'm going to put one word here, Glow, which is all about thin client stuff. And we can talk about it. It's a national internet for schools. All you need to know is it costs $75 million. We can talk about investment in technology and why it's maybe not as boring as some pedagogues would have us believe. That might tackle that. Now, you've all had your two questions, so that's it. That process is the one that was used by Lockheed when they wanted to come up with a new jet. Skunk works, yeah. Brainstorming doesn't work. Brainstorming is one of the most uncreative things you can ever do, because brainstorming leads to convergent thinking. We want divergent thinking, which is why you had no time to discuss, because the more time you have to discuss, the more you become like the people around you. Which is why people sometimes call the edublogosphere an echo chamber, because over time they all begin to sound like each other. So that's why we did it that way. We'll start at the top. Motivating the senior management, motivating colleagues who maybe just don't get it, don't want to get it, don't have time to get it because they've got another test to mark or something like that. I'm doing an entire session on how you get a school, or even just a department within a school, or how you get a district to adopt technology. I can give you the potted version, which was last year's conference. I think, Bob, you were at that, no? We adopt him.
Yep.
Let me just jump in. I worked for a year, I'll be fair, I had a year's contract with a local authority, which is like a school district in Scotland. A local authority with 15,000 students and about 1,000 teachers. And the mission was quite simple. We want to do something with technology that will make education better. Sounds like a dream job. It's one of these dream jobs you wish you'd never accepted, because it's actually too big. It's too big an issue. So we knocked it down. We thought, first of all, social media. Let me show you where East Lothian is. So you zoom in to United Kingdom, and where it looks like a little mouth, and East Lothian is on the little mouth, and it's just to the east of Edinburgh. And this is where I was working. You can see it's a rural area. It's got some inner city stuff going on to the left hand side of the map there, and over to the right you've got UK's, and therefore potentially the world's richest communities, where homes cost more than I can imagine. You've got that sitting next to mining communities where it's third generation unemployment. So you can picture a comprehensive school in this area. There are 6 comprehensive schools. In Scotland, 98% of children go to their local school. We tend not to like private schools. There's a socialist background to that that's very important to understand. This is a coal mining area. So just to paint a picture of the kind of thing, hugely divergent populations and schools trying to create convergent thinkers. And what we wanted to do was try and resist that and give a little bit more slack. The way we thought we'd do that is improving teachers' ability to teach. We reckoned that the one thing teachers always loved doing and never had time to do was observe other teachers teaching. Lots of nods there. So we said, okay, we need to let them observe. We cannot afford to let them out of class. We can't cover them and let them go to another class. So we'll have to do it virtually. So we, at the beginning of 2005, had 20 teachers who shared their thoughts and reflections, who took photographs of their school display, maybe took photographs of work students were doing, and published it on a weblog. And the weblog was our metric. So people were asking, how do you measure success? This is one way a rather brutalistic way of measuring success. Within about 6 months, we had increased to 350 of the 1,000 teachers, who every week, many of them every day, shared what they did in their classroom and read what their colleagues were doing in every classroom. And they changed their practice. And it is as simple as that. How did we do it? We ended up, we've now gone over to 1,500 user accounts, which means we've got more students taking part. The user base is huge. They're now up in about 350,000 visits a month. Although it dips down there at the end of the map, this was where actually the term comes back in August, students come back to school. There were fewer visitors, but they were spending longer on the individual blogs of teachers and students. So what we had was a localization. These were a bit like that Bebo page I showed you with the 20 or 30 friends. Most of these blogs have audiences of 20 or 30 people, but they're the most important 20 or 30 people for that class or that teacher, namely the head teacher, the principal, and the parents. What we did was this 5-point strategy, borrowed from business, and we wanted to see if it would work in education. We identified key user groups. The key user groups are not geeks, they're not people who get this already. So we actively went after people who had no use of technology in their work at the moment. Why? Because they're often the teachers that if they did manage to do it, other colleagues would say, well, if they can do it, I can sure as hell do it. So here we have, the woman at the back is a parent, the lad in the middle is a student teacher who didn't even have a job with us, and the woman in front here is a librarian. There were 20 key user groups. We went through every possible thing. So we had a principal, we had the director of the education department, we had student teacher, librarian, a parent, we had a computer science teacher, which was the only technology-related job title in there. We had primary educators, early years educators, those who teach three-year-olds. We made sure we had one of every group. Next thing we did was try and understand what was missing in their life. Talk to them. So we talking with them, we understood that elementary teachers often felt devalued by the system, that the work they did wasn't appreciated. And our simple answer back was, we just don't know what you're doing. You need to tell us what you're doing. So we hooked up a secondary school, a high school, and a elementary school, for example, and got them to look at each other's blogs. So they weren't even working collaboratively. They were just spectating collaboratively. And from that, they gained something. When the teacher learned how to take a photograph of display to put on her teacher blog, all of a sudden, every student in that class, age 3 or 4, started to take digital photographs as part of their work. So whatever the teacher did as part of her or his professional reflection ended up spilling over into the classroom. So we did not teach technology in terms of pedagogy. You'd have noticed it from the keynote this morning. I wasn't looking at technology use in the classroom. I was looking at technology use by and for the teacher, and the expectation that would spill into the classroom. Third thing we did is we really bolstered them. We gave them the podium. We let them go and evangelise. We arranged little mini courses, twilight courses, lunchtime courses, and let them go and talk to others about what they had done from the horse's mouth. And the multiplying effect of that was huge. Absolutely huge. The fourth thing, no one likes evangelists. It's all very touch your screen now. You'll have it here, no doubt. You'll meet someone who says, oh, you've got a blog. You've got to blog. And it's the biggest turn-off ever. It doesn't mean you want to blog. It makes you want to not blog even more. So turning evangelists into trainers, people say, let me show you this. And in 2 minutes, show you how something very small, but all these small bits over time create change. So we ended up with a lot of animation going on in our classrooms. Animation being something that's quite time-consuming, difficult to learn for teachers, ended up just appearing, because animation is nothing more than lots of 2 or 3 minute training sessions, and people were saying, have a go at this. And then the fifth thing was supporting their ideas. This is where unconferences have sprung from. It's from dissatisfaction with this arrangement, that people, that the expertise in this room has more to contribute to this than I do, perhaps. So TeachMeet was the unconference I started back in 2005. It was the first education unconference in the world, and it started with 5 people in a bar, as you can see. And I don't have a problem with drink. It's just it makes it far more convivial to talk about technology when you've got a pint of 80 shilling in your hand. And you go to a bar with Wi-Fi and you set aside 3 or 4 hours and you have no agenda. People just talk to each other about cool stuff they've done. If you're interesting, people listen. If they're not, they go to the bar. It's as simple as that. Again, it's about supporting bottom-up stuff, but providing a structure from the top that enables people to do that. So if you're a leader of learning, all of you, I guess, are leaders of learning, but if your job title says you are, something that is really worth considering is, can you set aside part of your budget, $100, to go behind a bar once a year? Seriously. Can you get one of the companies here, can you go and schmooze them and get them to pay for it? That's what I do. And I get free booze for people that come to my parties. Most companies are quite keen to do that, and as long as you keep it all out in the open and everyone knows how much money is exchanging hands and what it's been spent on, people are quite happy to drink the beer and talk. The kind of emergent behaviours, people leading by example. So if you set out to teach people how to blog and they all go off and start creating digital video, don't get downhearted because they're not blogging. Go and encourage them and teach them how to do better digital video. Lead by reminding. So if you're coordinating the activity of your group and they say, well, we'll email you our ideas and you can put it all together, you say, not on your Nelly. We're going to create a Google Doc and you're all going to contribute to that together. One document so I don't have to edit. Make sure you provide adequate support. So put a wiki. We actually put up a wiki. Hopefully I've got a wee bit of internet here. So edubuzz.org/support takes you to the support wiki on PBWiki, and the guidelines, for example, were concocted, the responsible use guidelines for the use of social media in East Lothian were concocted on a blog with the lawyers, with parents, with senior managers, with students, with teachers. Over the space of, you can see there actually, that's the final document they've ended up coming up with, but they put a deadline, they said make sure you've done it by Friday 25th of April, and every year they'll do it again. They open that document to be edited by people. So support in this form allows the geeks within your school to provide support. They become empowered to share their expertise. And the very final one was we've never had to lead by mandate, never had to tell anyone to do something. This was, the last one was probably the most important. When you're introducing Flickr photo sharing to people, how do you introduce it? Go straight for pedagogy? Or do you say, it would be great for your daughter's wedding next year? Find a personal thing that's going to grab them, and if it means that for the year they only use it for personal means, fine. It will get into the classroom, it will leak. So if you like, the best adoption strategy that's worked for me, and it's worked on a national level as well, has been effectively leaking. So leaking technology into schools rather than integrating it into schools. There you go. That sounded so good. It's a last little sentence. I'm hoping you don't think it's too naff. Okay, which one would you like to see next? Round pedagogy with square bureaucracy or time management and fitting it all in? Okay, hands up for round pedagogy with square bureaucracy. Hands up for time management, fitting it all in. Okay, we'll go for round pedagogy. So,
I have a question.
Go for it.
Back on the other things, real quickly.
Yeah.
When you said to let the key users evangelize, what forum did you give them?
We organised a room in a training centre, and we advertised their presence all around the authority. So that with 1,000 teachers, if you advertised it by all staff email to every teacher in the authority, you could expect anywhere between 12 and 20 people making the effort to go along.
So did you get about? So did you give them time like once, or was it like an ongoing thing, or how did you work that?
Each teacher chose themselves to do this. So if they wanted to run a 3-part series, then we did a 3-part series. We also did like a roadshow. So we found these talented teachers and brought them with us on roadshows to schools. The interesting thing about roadshows, and this is one for managers to bear in mind and those who do training, we needed the entire staff of the school to show up for that. And if one teacher decided that they had something better to do that afternoon of training, we packed up and left. We only had to do that once. And then the word got round. The message being nothing is more important than this. And And that head teachers like that a lot. Yeah.
When you talk about motivating senior manager, was there somebody at the top that was a true advocate that gave you a mandate to make this all happen?
The top. That helps. Now, he didn't just come out of the blue and say, hey, we're going to blog. I was blogging, this is also the local authority where I had my first teaching job, and I'd been blogging with students since 2003, under the radar, and had been sending emails to our current director of children's services, who at the time was the principal of another high school, saying you really should do this instead, because it would create bigger audiences for your students' work, blah, blah, blah. And I felt dejected. I felt ignored because I never got a reply. And it took 4 years for him to say, we're going to do this. 4 years. It takes time, but it worked. His blog, Don Ledingham's Learning Blog. You go to edubuzz.org/blogs/Don's blog. There you go. You can access the Director of Education and Children's Services thoughts. Posts entitled, what does the Director of Education add to education? With open comments for people to respond to. That's his current tagline, I will not give up on kids. So, developing his role, he's incredibly reflective. Community-based school management. So you can see exactly what his mind is like. And there's perhaps some language, if you like, that he's using that I can't use because I'm not a director, that you would be able to mimic somewhat, and you'd certainly be able to leave comments and ask advice from himself, and he would respond. So do go on and explore that. Yeah.
When you said that you started to have teachers sharing, was the only way of sharing blogging, or did they do other virtual
things? They certainly did other things. The blog was the easiest one for us to have as a kind of metric to see how well we were doing, because we owned the blog system. We bought a server and all the blogs were on it, so we could see growth, we could see who was spending time doing what. But you'll notice, let me just go to a class website. We found that parents were really wanting to follow their child's class rather than the school. And it's true, you're interested in what your class is doing rather than what the whole school is doing. Ah, it's summer password protected. Number primary P3. Some of them are just starting. These are obviously teachers who are just in the process of putting it all there. I wonder whether Ron Nidri's got anything. You can go and explore. This is the problem in the summer break. Everyone goes and creates new blogs and land at the top of the pile. Yeah, there you go. This is someone who's starting. This is for 3-year-olds for next year. The reason we posted them all on edubuzz.org is it was one website everyone could remember. So you didn't have to know anything. As long as you could type edubuzz.org into a browser, you would find something of relevance. I'm really disappointed that I'm not finding anything straight away to share with you. I feel this one can be... Yeah, they're all starting fresh for the new year. You've also got individual teachers, such as Ollie Bray is a great example of a teacher who shares all the time in his blog. So these became quite important for local communities too. But if you look down the side of his blog, he's actually on Skype as well, you'll see his Flickr pictures from around the school. So he's integrating Flickr photography. He creates podcasts and videos, and he uses things like RockU to display photographs on his blog. So yeah, we found that we didn't have to train people too much in that. They discovered it. And the one way they discovered it as well is through these evangelizing sessions. Okay, I'm going to move on, just so we can get some coverage of other points there.
When you said teachers are redoing their blogs, so every year they start all again? Or is it just continuously going to the 100 pages?
They're creating, like the class will come up with a name for their blog. They'll say, we want our blog to be called. And so they create a new blog for that class.
Oh, so every
year schools change in June, a month before the summer vacation. It's a real quirk of the Scottish system. So all school years change at June, which is why you've got all these empty blogs, because they've not been in school, they've been out playing and doing.
So then every June they start over again?
Some of them do, okay. Some of them don't.
Okay. Because otherwise, years and years go by, you have 1,000 pages. I mean,
sure. But there, the other thing is, linking allows you to go back to the archive and see what you've learned before. And it's vital that they're not being deleted, they're sitting there. And they form part of the learning log of that student. So
what do you do for your blog? Do you archive parts or just keep it going forever?
It just goes. Just keep going. When you look back at your first post, it's really embarrassing because you know how bad you were, right? I'm going to look at round pedagogy with the square bureaucracy, because I think this is the bit, for me, with my little month in the States, it's the biggest problem in the States. How many of you are familiar with assessment for learning as a concept? How many of you feel confident that you could stand up here on the stage and tell people what it was? Good, okay, not too bad. I think it's an area where we struggle sometimes. What I wanted to try and do was explore this concept of especially peer assessment. Let's just have a look. So, how do you encourage your students currently? Someone was talking about that here. I heard someone talking about how you encourage students. So, how do you encourage students? What mechanisms do you have?
Give them the decision making.
Give them the decision making. Give if
within
we're,
limits.
We're about to set give, out with a bunch of 6-year-olds on
give
a
their input
project.
Value.
Uh-huh.
Give their input value. Give their input value.
Give it value. I'm going to take both of these because they're different and we'll have to look at them separately. So the first one is let the students lead the learning. So you're doing you've got a bunch of 6-year-olds in your class and you're about to, the topic you as a teacher have in mind is you need to talk about the Vikings, because that's what Scottish primary school students study, the Vikings. You need to talk about the Vikings. The teacher starts out by saying, okay, we're going to talk about the Vikings. What do you know about the Vikings? And the students say, oh, we knew they had boats. How far do you take student-led learning there?
Well, you've obviously got to study the boats, and if they, you know, you go from there, they give you 10 ideas, 3 of them may be great ideas that you're going to keep, 7 you throw out.
Exactly.
You know,
and it's kind of the same way we did here with your questions, that we threw a lot out because we didn't
have... Or you merged them, or you...
Yeah. So the first thing is you talk about boats, and for 3 weeks you don't talk about Vikings at all. You just talk about boats. How does a concrete boat stay afloat? It's a question that when you live by the sea, you never ask. It's another toilet paper thing because you see concrete boats all the time. How did the first big boats that set sail made from iron? How did the iron sides, how did they float? So you go into science, all that kind of thing, before you've got onto literature, which is what you'd really wanted to do. That student-led learning, that is what happens in early years in Scottish classrooms. Students control learning, not 99%, not 98%, 100% of the time. The teachers do retro planning. So they plan in reverse. Based on what happened today, they will write the plan of what happened today and start having an inkling about where they're going to take it the following day. How many of you honestly pre-plan every lesson you teach? That's what I thought. How many of you retro plan? So we do it already. This is not new. But being really explicit about it is important. I liked all the name badges are doing that today, so I can't see. What was your name, sorry?
Barbara.
Barbara's point was empower. So was that empower them by...
Yeah. Give their input value.
Give their input value. Take a look at this. Mind your ears. What are your thoughts? Little. Is that what you're thinking? Would you congratulate them for doing this? For a company that wants new, fresh engineers, divergent thinking engineers. The thing about the first time you watch it, the first time I was watching it, we have a huge problem with vandalism on the railways. It means I don't get to work on, that's my excuse anyway, it means I don't get to work on time quite often because the track is vandalised, people do things on the track. So you're watching that video, you go, oh, that's so-and-so. And then you see it. Now, the thing about praise and about valuing student ideas, you all know this, you've all had it, student ideas sometimes come out and you think, how stupid could they be to have thought that? You get so far through an idea, the child is sitting there, especially in elementary, child's sitting there telling you their very long, thought out story about the logic of why concrete boats float, and it's got to do with fairies or something like that, and you're getting all, oh god, how am I going to get out of this one, because you can't say it's wrong. And then if you hold out, the genius moment comes at the end, and that's kind of what this advert's done. And it's really hard to not speak. And at the unconference EduBloggerCon on Monday, are the guys here who organised that, who unorganised the unconference, they had an excellent first exercise because you had to introduce yourself to each other, but the others mustn't speak when you're doing that. And it's really hard to do. You realise how talkative you are and how difficult it is to keep your mouth shut. And as a teacher, how difficult it is to keep your mouth shut, but also to keep your preconceptions at the back of your head out of the way to allow these creative moments to come through. I found this, which at the JFK Museum in Boston. Free society can't help the many who are poor, cannot save the few who are rich. What this is about for me is this idea again of every child having some kind of valuable contribution to make in learning. And it's just sometimes not very evident as a teacher to value ideas which at first glance seem absolutely ridiculous. Is that fair? We've all been there. That's a silly idea, that's wrong. No, nice idea, but has anyone else got a better idea? show you that. Second point was, how often can we do this? So we can value students' ideas by repeating them, by saying, wow, that's superb, by giving them apples because we can't give them chocolate anymore. How often can you do that, though, realistically? It's hard. I want to show you this. Do you know Katie Melua? Come across her before.
We are 12 billion light years from the edge. That's a guess. No one can ever say it's true, but I know that I will always be with you.
It's a nice song. Any science teachers in the audience? Okay, do you want to critique it, please? Okay, we're not 12 billion light years from the edge. It's not a guess. Years of research show that we are 13.7 billion light years from the edge. We can say it's true. If a child produced this song and sang it to you in class, after wiping away the tears from your eyes, would you do what I've just done, science teachers? No. Yes, who's there? Here she is.
I disagree.
Go for it.
Because I think you're making a phenomenal point about how you respect kids and how you give them freedom and respect that. But I do think that it's a balance. I left your teacher's college in the 70s where we were told to pat everybody on the head and say, brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And after 25 years of teaching, I know that that's not helpful. You have to help them understand some measure for them to truly value themselves.
Measure?
Measure.
Tell me what a measure looks like.
They're going to have feedback. Whether,
tell me
and
what it
hopefully,
is.
Hopefully not just from their teachers, but from their peers.
Yes.
If you, one of the, you know, we always just do things once. I had a class of third graders build towers, and we were testing how they would hold up with books. And they did a really great job, and they were all in teams. But the real learning didn't take place until we took them all down and then built them again, because they were all looking at each other's towers. And the second time around, they were all taller, and they were all stronger.
There you go. So peer assessment.
There has to be a piece of that. And I don't want my kids deciding the whole curriculum. I as an adult and an educator, have an idea of some broad things, but I certainly am going to listen to them.
Yeah.
And I think...
So we need balance is the first one.
In isolation.
I'm going to go back to this example, and we're going to put your theory to the test. First of all, peer assessment. How do you think Katie's peers assess this song. Do you think it's sold? Yes, it sold millions of copies around the world. Okay? Now her teacher comes in the form of Simon Schema, a scientific journalist, who wrote a column expressing his concern that it was factually incorrect and the whole generation of teenagers were going to be affected by it forever. Katie was really embarrassed, her good old Calvinist education kicking in, and re-recorded the song.
We are 13.7 billion degrees from the edge of the observable universe. That's a good estimate with well-defined error bars. And with the available information, I predict that I will always be there.
So it's about balance. The difference here is between final product and process. What we're talking about is the final product we would like to be correct. My contention is that it doesn't need to be correct all the time. In Scotland, we do not formally assess children until they are 15 or 16 years old. There is a reason for that, because you've got to learn. You've got to make mistakes to learn. And if you assess the mistakes, then that doesn't do much good for anyone. And the process is where ingenuity is happening. Final product gives you average. If you heard, do you mind, do you want another very short poem? Don't know why I've gone all poetic. I'm not a poet. My mother was an English teacher and despaired because I never read, but now I like poems. I like this one. This is by Mike Buscemi. I don't cause teachers trouble. My grades have been okay. I listen in my classes. I'm in school every day. My teachers think I'm average. My parents think so too. I wish I didn't know that though. There's a lot I'd like to do. I'd like to build a rocket. I read a book on how. Or start a stamp collection. But no use trying now. Because since I found I'm average, I'm smart enough, you see, to know there's nothing special I should expect of me. I'm part of that majority, the hump part of the bell, who spends his life unnoticed in an average kind of hell. I'd read that to your superintendent, because final product will lead to lots of people in the hump of the bell.
Who wrote that?
Mike Buscemi. I'll blog it. I'll make sure you get it. This is how. Do you watch The Wonder Years?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know the father? This is how the standardized testing education looks. It looks like his life. That. Importance is measured by how many emails you get in, and productivity is measured by how many you send out. And this guy Gordon Torr is a creative genius, works for advertising agencies. Invisible work is the curse of the modern world, because we need to metricise everything. We need to give it an assessment. We need to give a metric to something, and a lot of the process is invisible. It's hard. It's intangible. I'm not going to give you a bit of Audin. I'll put the Audin onto the blog as well. Process is where the ingenious stuff happens, though, genuinely. Some examples of that would be in this. This is touching on the round pedagogy. Assessment for learning, where you have peers assess each other's work, is great in theory and really hard to do in practice with paper. If you've got a class of 30, each with a paper learning log, each having to look at each other's learning log once a week, you spend your life doing learning logs. The minute you put it online, you start learning in the classroom, and the reflection takes place at home. This is a teacher who created a blog called Rate My Mates. It's based on the two stars and a wish principle, which is that in everything we do, we should try to give two things that were good and one thing that could be improved. So here is a teacher who's put up MP3 files and PowerPoints of various things the students have done. This is just pretty bog standard French.
The emperor needs to know Caridium.
It's got mistakes. Riddled with mistakes.
Je m'appelle Fiona. J'ai 13 ans.
Sounds quite motivated because it's a podcast, it's a radio show, it's not a speaking test. So he's put it up there, and then students, not even from the same school, other schools have left comments saying what was good about it and what could be improved. Back to your sandcastles. The structure was changed. How many times do you think they re-recorded it to get it just perfect? Lots. And that's what languages teachers have been dreaming of. Good use of vocabulary, good accents, and very fluent. They could have went a bit slower. One of the things is foreign language students think they have to speak really fast to sound fluent, and they end up creating lots of mistakes. I think they do it in English as well. Most show and tells I've seen in English classrooms, students race through it, slow down, and so they did. They re-recorded it, put it up, and improved. You see the same in creative writing. So our first initial paragraph is tiny, three comments on how to improve it. Some good stuff, now think about the following. She just had, you know, one star and lots of wishes. There's a comma splice at window. I'd remove that where before perched, it's snappier. I'd also remove the comma after move. So you know, people give them quite in-depth work. The second paragraph, a bit longer. Until you get a very long story, incredibly well written, that's taken cognizance of all these comments being put in. This was done over the space of about 4.5 weeks. And in 4.5 weeks, this girl saw her final assessment go from a grade 3, which is very mediocre, 1 to 7, to a grade 1, which is as good as you can get. Why? Because she used the collective intelligence of her blog readers. Her teacher set that up for her. Her teacher went and fished in the audience for her at short notice to make sure she had some critical friends to get started with. But that's the kind of round pedagogy that does not fit necessarily into summative assessment. But here's an example of it actually working really well with summative assessment. My belief is very, very strongly, if you do peer assessment, especially if you do it online so it's quicker, the summative assessment will take care of itself. Absolutely. No questions asked. In Scotland, we've found that to be absolutely true. If you go to the Learning and Teaching Scotland site, it's ltscotland.org.uk/assess, you'll get a whole website devoted to making assessment part of learning. There we go. So assessment for learning, assessment as learning, and then assessment of learning is the last one, given the least prominence. So do go and explore that website. It will also help give you some arguments maybe to take back to your school, your superintendent. There are professional development workshops online that you can use with your school. It's got a Scottish accent, but it's okay. There was a hand up, yeah.
I think that's the number one pedagogical practice that is almost non-existent in the United States. And having had conversations with the people putting together all the data systems in schools, just informally saying, do you understand the difference between assessment of and assessment of? No idea.
I had a university professor from the States who thought that when I was talking about formative assessment, I was talking about final assessment.
Right. Can you zoom in on the web?
Sure. It's just ltscotland.org.uk/assess. You'll get it all there. It's a very, very good website. It's one of our more popular ones. Now, we have literally 1 minute left. What I'm going to do is go back to that very long list that we had before. I think we kind of looked at that. Round pedagogy for me is really assessment is for learning. And we have to teach that way. When you teach that way, all the tools and technology you'll go off and explore in the next 3 days will just slip in. You won't have to integrate anything. They're just there. They just work. That's the first one. In terms of using learning from SNSs, social network services, for pedagogy without becoming a creepy treehouse, I'm going to incorporate that into the other workshop that I'm doing on We're Adopting Social Media. So if you want to explore that, then that might be a place to do that. Like I say, yeah, you don't want to go into Bebo and become friends with your students. You'll lose your job if you do, probably. It's not a sensible thing to do. But go on to Facebook, go on to Bebo, and you do your own analysis of what you think makes that tick. And ask your students, what do you actually like about that? And what don't you like about that? And see how you could even just change your virtual learning environment a little bit. Could you introduce individual skins for students so they can change the look of it? What do we need to do to shift the fundamentals? I think we tackled that with adoption strategy. Because one adoption strategy is all about motivating the senior management and the laggards. It's all about shifting the fundamentals. Small, passionate groups. If you can be one small, passionate group with 3 or 4 colleagues, get one of them to create another one. Before the school year is ended, you'll have the whole school on site. The metrics of success, I think you can use the old metrics. I think you can use summative assessment. You can use final grades. You can use how good your school is doing in the formal testing that we all have to put up with or all have to do. But I think your results would be a lot better using the formative assessment, which unfortunately is much harder to apply metrics to. The best metrics of success in formative assessment would be traffic lighting. So do I feel red, amber, or green about this particular concept? If I feel red about it, that means I don't understand anything. If I feel amber about it, I need to work harder. If I feel green about it, I can let it go and move on to something else. That's the metrics. Nice and simple again, not too complicated. The very final one that I'm probably not going to answer in the way that you want me to, maybe, I don't know. See these two words here. What does technology look like? What does the classroom of the 21st century, even though we're 8 years in, look like? There is no one image that you're going to be able to present to a superintendent. There is no one video that you can show. There is nothing on YouTube that will satisfy your desires for a thing to show to your superintendent. You need to go to your classroom and teach the way you know is right. You need to send a memo to your superintendent and say, come and see me teach. This is the future. And then live by the consequences. It basically means this time next year you'll be the superintendent. I'm absolutely convinced of it. I did that as a French and German teacher. Unfortunately, it meant I left the classroom. That is the one risk, that if you're doing something that no one else in your school is doing, then you'll probably be taken away by the, you know, by the men in suits and made to do something else. But you will not find what technology looks like. And please, if you find a blog that uses those terms, you go leave the comment. There is no look like. It's just what you do in your classroom. Really unsatisfactory answer for that one, but it's probably there. I'm going to wrap it up there. This is a hardly a round table environment. These guys are the only ones round a table. And they're not even talking to each other. They're on Twitter. So, can I just say again, I hope that your expectations have been met by the hero and by this follow-up. I'm a really searchable person on Google. I'm always on Skype and Twitter and my blog. And these points that we've not done, let's discuss them online. We don't need to constrain ourselves to an hour-long conference session. And you don't need to constrain yourself to listening to me for an hour. I don't enjoy speaking for an hour or two. So let's take this online. Tag it BLC08. I'll find it. You can all find the conversations that way. And host it in your space. So you pick the question that you didn't get answered today. You host it. You give your ideas. And then we'll see how many in this room chip in. Now there's about 9,500 people in this room. So I expect 95 comments on every blog post that's created around these themes. It won't happen, I know. But go forth and teach. Enjoy. Okay.